Hey, welcome to Hellbent, a feminist podcast for those who resist and persist. I'm Devin.
And I'm Drexel.
And today on the pod, we are going to be talking about Eric fucking Schneiderman, because of course we have to. We are also going to be talking about the Be Best, but really only if you're white initiative from Melania Trump. And then we will get into a little bit of the Iran deal bullshittery. But before we do that, Drexel, how was your weekend?
It was good. It was busy. I was in San Diego all weekend. Tim and I went down, I had to work, but Tim and I went down on Friday, and then we went to Disneyland yesterday while your internet was down.
Yep.
And, it was good. It was just a good week. I did the BBC radio last week.
It's so cool.
Was a lot of fun. And, so they were like, oh, we want to have you back. So we'll see what happens with that.
Wait,
so,
did someone else discover your sweet, sweet radio voice?
I don't know how it happened. I was surprised that afternoon when they contacted me via Twitter.
Yeah, that's awesome, though.
And so I was like, okay, I'll do it.
Yeah, sure.
Sure.
That's great.
And but it was good. How about you?
Well, on Sunday, I went to the Renaissance Fair.
I saw that.
Which is like the nerdiest, but it was so fun. I dressed up, Alex dressed up, and we just spent all day hanging out, watching shows, eating turkey legs. It was great. I really enjoyed it.
You didn't do the May the 4th at Disneyland?
We did not. We did not. But we didn't want to fight the crowds and the heat.
Yeah, it was, they actually extended it a day because it was like overcrowded.
It was ridiculous. And I was just not. And then actually Saturday, I love that I didn't lead with this, but Saturday was my 6-year anniversary with
Congrats.
Alex. Yeah. So it was a really nice day.
All right, Devin, let's get into some listener feedback from last week.
Okay, so Blue Honey on Twitter tweeted, quote, I appreciate Devin's response to the letter writer who claimed her majority white community couldn't be racist because they didn't interact with people of color negatively. They may have, but were insensitive and or unaware of how their actions were perceived. And I actually got a lot of feedback to the discussion that I had on Thursday about Trump voters being racist, calling them all racists, and how that's not really productive. And you know, this is in response to a piece in The Atlantic about a study that found that Trump voters were not worried about economic issues. They were worried about maintaining their white privilege.
Yeah, I mean, the economic argument is the Sanders argument.
Right.
Not the Trump argument.
Yeah, and it's always been a moot point because we know that Hillary Clinton won a majority of voters who make less than $50,000 a year. So we know that that's not a correct narrative, just on its face.
I mean, even the Make America Great Again slogan was not a economic
It was not an economic narrative. Message. Right. It was always about white privilege.
Right.
So that was a really interesting discussion. I had two different letters that kind of had different point of views, and it was really, really interesting.
I just have want to shout out to Brando Furtado who tweeted at me about the messaging conversation that we had last week. He says that the Republican message is always safety. We'll keep you safe from terror, change, PC police. The Democratic message is always progress. And goes on to talk about the messages that beat George W. Bush and Reagan and Nixon, and that it could definitely beat Trump. The problem comes after we get power. We haven't mastered a simplified and easy to digest idea as to why we should stay in power. We'd have to look back to the FDR times to find that. To which I responded, the fact that he says that we haven't mastered a simplified and easy to digest idea, to me, is the messaging problem.
Right.
We live in a time where we get 24-hour news. We want instant likes and gratification on Instagram and Facebook. We need and crave information very quickly. So we are at this point in need of a simplified message. And that's when we talk about having a messaging problem. That's the messaging problem. It's not the policies. We know that Democratic policies, a majority of Americans agree with.
Right.
That's not the problem. It's how do we take those policies.
Pretty complicated
policies. And that was the problem for Hillary Clinton, is that she was super smart, and it kind of went over people's heads, and people didn't quite understand what she was trying to get at. Barack Obama was always criticized for being overly professorial, even though he had a simplified campaign message.
Right.
When it came down to policies, obviously there are, you know, 60 million people who did not see it that way, who voted the other, you know, who eventually in 2016 voted the other way. So so that is the messaging problem. And I think that we have to be able to separate policy from
messaging.
Message. And when I say message, I mean something that we can clearly understand.
Right. Well, I read something a while ago, so this has probably changed even in the time since, but the sound bites that are played on news programs, you know, from the 60s and 70s and even 80s, the length of the time they would give a sound bite was over a minute, sometimes over 2 minutes. And now a sound bite is, what, 15 seconds?
Right.
I mean, so the amount of time we even have on news programs to get, you know, if you take a speech and they're going to play a certain bit of it, now we're talking about seconds, not minutes. And so if you don't have something super simple that can be put into a 15-second soundbite, you're not going to get the airtime.
Which is why every time we talk about messaging, I talk about the fact that the Democratic Party and surrogates and candidates have to do better town halls on policy and less on sound bites to voters,
right?
And have those conversations, and it should be a thing that we are constantly doing. You know, if you want to be a representative, you got to be amongst the people, and you got to be able to kind of talk them through it. And if you want to bring star power in it to get them into the seats, do that. But make it an event.
Okay, I want to jump right into our first news block, which, you know, this story kind of broke me a little bit, Drexel. And I'm kind of happy that we're recording on a Tuesday. It's kind of serendipitous that my internet was out yesterday. My internet's been out all weekend, by the way. It went out on, like, Saturday morning.
Is it Time Warner?
No, it's AT&T.
Because, you know, Time Warner is the worst.
I know. And it went out on, like, Saturday morning, and it didn't get turned back on until later yesterday than I wanted. But it was kind of serendipitous because news broke yesterday, late yesterday, that Eric fucking Schneiderman is a piece of trash. And, you know, it's really the story, and I'll get into the kind of the specifics of it in a second. The story is so hard. He was the Democratic Attorney General for the state of New York. And he was largely thought of as one of the good guys, like really one of the good guys. And he had sued Trump over Trump University and won. He had filed civil suit against Harvey Weinstein and the Weinstein Company in the wake of the allegations against him. He was actually just honored at some luncheon, being one of the like three champions of choice that he was lauded. And that was on May 1st. So we're talking a week ago. So this is a person who's really positioned himself as a champion for women's rights and a champion of the progressive movement in general.
Yes, I have. I'm sure I have varying thoughts on that.
Okay.
I do. I think you can separate the two. I think he's a very good. I think he was a very good attorney general.
He was. And that's why I think
a very good campaigner for progressive policies. I do think that there's a difference, because we're going to talk about some of those specifics. There's a difference in the way that Eric Schneiderman handled his statements and the way that Donald Trump has handled his statements, Harvey Weinstein has handled his statements, Bill Cosby has handled his statements, R. Kelly has handled his statements. Any of the other guys who have been in this position have handled the way that they have gone about this. From what Eric Schneiderman has said and done since. Some of those guys that I just named have not been progressive champions for anything.
Right, right.
And certainly have not put their credibility on the line to go to be a part, or at least somewhat a voice for a movement to help propel certain movements, whether or not it's the Me Too movement or whether or not it is what the president is or is not doing out of the White House. So I think that there is a way to not diminish the office of the Attorney General and his role as Attorney General, and his personal transgressions.
But see, I think this goes beyond personal transgressions. What this is The New Yorker reported,
I think this was Ronan Farrow.
It was. Again. And
but that's the second time that Ronan Farrow has done an article that has brought down somebody.
So four women have come forward and accused Eric Schneiderman of physically and emotionally abusing them in the context of intimate relationship. So they were dating this guy and he was violent towards them. And this isn't just a personal transgression. That's sort of like saying Rob Porter, who was the staff secretary, who had I hate saying allegedly because there's photographic evidence, but who had allegedly physically abused two of his ex-wives. That's like saying that's a personal transgression and why can't he keep his job?
No, what I'm saying is that the stuff that we called out at the beginning of him being a champion for progressive things, like, that's undeniable. We can't, that's.
But I guess for me, it just feels slimy and tainted.
I disagree, but yeah, I get it. I am equally as focused on him doing what's right in the wake of these allegations and that piece of it, and resigning and stepping down, as I am his being a champion for New York State. And that is something that is undeniable. It's like saying that the policies of Bill Clinton are somehow tainted because of things that happened with Monica Lewinsky or things that happened with whoever else. Right. Like, it's undeniable that those things are, that his presidency had great things.
So in some way, separating art from artist, as we talk about,
which is very funny you mentioned that, because it's like somebody saying this weekend, Childish Gambino came out with his This America This Weekend.
Yes. Okay.
Childish Gambino is or Donald Glover is a champion for black voices in some cases. But there are also people out there who look at Childish Gambino and say, oh, but you're actually with a white woman.
Interesting.
So I can separate art from personally, mm-hmm. and be like, he can still talk about black issues and still be with somebody who's white. Like, that doesn't change anything. Eric Schneiderman, it's Bill Clinton. Bill Clinton can talk about women's issues. He can do that. He's a former president of the United States. Right. He is still a voice and he is still a presence in Bill Clinton, not Eric Schneiderman. Is still a voice enough to be able to say, my voice is still as powerful as it was when I was president of the United States. And if I somehow bring it up just a little bit, even in the context of me looking back at what I did and making it right, or at least attempting to, like, that's it. And if Eric Schneiderman comes out and says, you know, eventually when he, as this story continues to unfold, and say, yes, I was wrong, and here is what I have tried to do over the past. Here is what I will continue to do. I've resigned. It took him less than half a day to resign.
It was like 3 hours.
Yeah. It was literally like, he was like, I'm not going through this. I'm not, you know, I'm not going to, not going to engage in something that could hurt the office of the Attorney General and then the things that we're doing.
But I feel like when we pick this apart, there's a lot more nuance there, because I disagree. I think that Bill Clinton talking about women's issues is sort of like me talking about black issues. I have no authority whatsoever. I can't.
But there are plenty of guys out there that talk about being pro-choice. There's plenty of guys out there that talk about women's issues. So you can't say that.
Yeah, but those guys. But they. This is a man who has abused women knowingly, over time, more than once over a period of many years. And him doing that while positioning himself as a champion of women is, I think, absolutely repulsive.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like I said, I think as we start to get more information, as Eric Schneiderman starts to respond to certain things and we get more information, like, I mean, this came out, what, yesterday?
Yeah.
So it's like Eric Schneiderman's word versus other people's words. And yes, we believe the women and their situations, but it is how Eric Schneiderman responds to some of this stuff that is going to be super important for him.
Right.
And for us to be like, okay.
Oh, I'm just hoping that there's no apology tour here. This is something that we
I don't think there's
actively pushing against. Just like with you know your example with Bill Clinton, like him saying like I still have this powerful voice, I'm trying to make it right. But to me that just sounds like an apology tour. I think
it's the actions versus the words. Mm-hmm. I think if Bill Clinton came out and said, "Listen, I'm going to talk about like Bill Clinton really hasn't As if you've noticed, Bill Clinton really hasn't said anything about the Me Too movement because he would be a distraction to that part
right,
of it.
Right.
But that doesn't mean that he can't talk about women's issues, other women's issues that are equally as important. And so Eric Schneiderman, if he wants to talk about being portrayed, if he wants to talk about infertility or infant mortality, like if he wants to talk about those things and be a champion for those, he won't be in the position to do that anymore.
Right. But I mean, he literally drafted legislation that made choking a crime, and because it's a indicator of further violence in a domestic
room. Right, but he was also the New York Attorney General. That's his job.
Well, yeah, he did that when he was in the state senate. But I'm saying, like, how, like he did that, and then these four women are alleging that he choked them.
Right, and I think one of his statements was, in the privacy of intimate relationships, I've engaged in role-playing and other consensual sexual activity. I've not assaulted anyone. I've never engaged in non-consensual sex, which is a line I would not cross.
Yeah, but these women are saying it was not consensual, and it didn't even happen in the context of a sexual intimate moment. Like, a lot of the women were saying, we were fully clothed, and he just came at me and choked me. Like...
Right. I mean, and I'm sure there are plenty of Jekyll and, like they said, I guess one of the women said he's like a Jekyll and Hyde figure. And that's not something that's uncommon in politics and politicians in general. But
that's just the narrative has always been. And to me, I'm kind of like, fuck that. Like, just right. Because we expect politicians to be Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde.
No, I'm saying that's the reality is that there's right. Some of these people like... You know, all men are created equal is not just something that's written down. I mean, they are essentially physical beings that have tempers, that have the ability to hurt women.
Right.
And so whether or not it's a Democrat or a Republican or an independent or a progressive or a liberal or it's across the board and
right.
All men are somewhat the same. I mean, there is a significant amount of misogyny in the LGBT community, too. So like it doesn't matter if they're straight or gay or whatever.
Right.
Like that's the reality. And I think a lot of people are coming to, you know, the reckoning is continuing to happen. But in the, you know, and on this show, we talk a lot of politics. In the context of politics, the stuff that Eric Schneiderman was doing was super important to
right.
Advancing the state. So
well,
I
think that's why it's so,
it's
that's
it's,
why the story kind of broke me a little bit.
Yeah, it's a shitty situation, but then you look at it and you go, but he helped a bunch of people in the state of New York.
It's just, so, he was supposed to be, that's what's so frustrating and disgusting
yeah.
About it. Like, he's supposed to be one of the good guys. And so it's like, when he was on Samantha Bee's show a couple months ago, and, you know, they were making the Schneiderman Spider-Man, like, superhero joke, and it was a really funny bit. Like, that's how he positioned himself, and he really felt like it. Like, he felt like he was taking on this, you know, in a very comic book way, like, this evil corporation trying to take over the world. And that was how he was positioning himself. And to find out that someone like that, that person that we want to believe is the superhero in this narrative,
See, that is the problem with people.
Right. You can't put people on a pedestal.
You can't put people on the pedestal. No matter if you, like, I never one time last year put Hillary Clinton on a pedestal.
Right. Well, because they're real people. She's a real person.
Barack
Obama
was never on a pedestal for me.
Right.
There's this is just for listeners in general. The moment that you put somebody on a pedestal will be the moment that they will disappoint you.
Right. But there's a lot of ways Eric Schneiderman could have disappointed me. And this is,
I'm saying, that
the absolute worst one.
Yeah. And again, I go back to the political piece of it. I'm looking at it from the political piece of it, and I still think that the stuff that he did as attorney general, it cannot be diminished or taken back.
Right.
You know, so.
Is it the office of the attorney general or is it Eric Schneiderman?
It's the office of the attorney general for the state of New York.
Right.
Eric Schneiderman just so happened to be the vessel
that
pushed some of those major things through. And
well, to his credit, that's why he said he resigned. Was I'm not saying that I did this. I'm saying I don't want to taint the office.
Correct. And that's, again, like, it goes back to the Bill Clinton argument. Nothing can be diminished from some of the policies that helped advance the office of the president and that presidency at the time. So the moment that we stop looking at Eric Schneiderman or any of these progressive champions as anything other than political vessels, it is their job to advance certain things. Their personal, what they do in their personal life, yeah, is probably pretty shitty because everybody's pretty shitty at some point. So if you can separate the two and be
my problem is that this isn't just pretty shitty because this also goes even deeper. You know, something else I want to talk about that's in this story is the way he positioned himself to these women, talking about the office of the attorney general. He said to one of them, quote, "I am the law." Like, these women had nowhere to go, no redress. He is the top law enforcement officer in the state of New York. That power and using that power in this context is so despicable. And I mean, like, again, not to
right,
like,
but
be
we're
dramatic
also we're
here.
Also saying stuff that these people have said that he said. So I just really cannot get into this, like, he said, she said, because I don't know what Eric Schneiderman said. I was not in the room with
right.
Eric Schneiderman.
But I mean, but even like, but this is, I think this
and that
is
I'm
piece...
sure, something that people say.
Right. But
but I just don't know that, you know, that.
Well, this is just the piece of the story where it gets into the reason why women don't come forward. And why it's taken this long for women to share their stories and for the Me Too movement to come about. So men, there's an inherent power differential in our society between men and women, just from phase one, right? Nothing being said. And men in positions of power over women in like an office setting, then that adds to that power differential. But here we have an added layer of this law enforcement hierarchy. So of course women are afraid of men, but in these cases, there's no authority to go to for redress. Like there's literally nowhere for them to go. Like what if they had gone to the police? I mean, we've all seen bad Law and Order SVU episodes where they're right. like, it's the police commissioner's son. There's nothing we can do about it. And then Olivia Benson there is to be like, well, fuck that. I'm going to do it anyway.
Oh,
I know.
This episode was so good.
He even said it. Whether he said it or not, I mean, there was an implication. He is the law in New York State.
Which is true.
Right. And I mean, this reminds me, this is a personal story, but it reminds me of this time. Not too long ago, I was driving in my neighborhood and I was at a stoplight and there was traffic and I like blocked the intersection. Which there's a big sign that says, do not block the intersection. And so I got rightfully pulled over by a police officer who was like, do you know what you did? I'm like, I blocked the intersection. Okay. We were, you know, he asked for my license and registration and he was going through. And he came back and he started saying, you know, I could give you this ticket that's like, you have to go to court and it's like a, you know, like more of a felony thing because, you know, you were ignoring a posted sign, which is like apparently a really big deal. Or I could just give you this lesser ticket. And then he goes on to say, you're so beautiful and you look so beautiful this morning. You know, I'm going to go easy on you. And, you know, you're such a vision. And, you know, he asked me if I was married and if he should call me Mrs. Handy and, you know, like, my husband's such a lucky man. I mean, like, all of the textbook disgusting things that a man in a position of power can say to you. And y'all, I'm me, right? I am the kind of person that's normally like, what the fuck is this? What is going on? Like, you're not allowed to talk to me like that. But in this moment, I mean, it was a police officer who's writing me a ticket with his gun on his hip, you know, and being disgusting and slimy to me. Mm-hmm. And I felt like I had no course of action. And that was a uniformed police officer. I mean, I can't imagine how these women felt talking about the boss of the boss of the boss of the boss of the uniformed police officer. I mean, I ended up reporting him. I got his badge number and I reported him, and nothing ever came of it. I followed up a couple of times and, you know, no response, which no one was surprised about. But I mean, you know, in these situations, there's such a fear and such a paralyzing nature to this. And then, you know, that's the part of politicians and law enforcement and government officials where there's this inherent law enforcement hierarchy. And again, for him to even sort of use that and to use his position, honestly, for me, it does take away from his accomplishments, not the office. I think you're right there, Drexel. I think you have to look at some of these things as what the office of the AG has done. And that's fine. But it's just, I mean, I guess I'm really feeling for these women who came forward, especially the two that went on record, like as named on the record, and what they must be going for. And it's just, it's also really frustrating because, you know, none of these women came forward before until they knew that it had happened to other women. And that's part of this sort of abuse is isolation. And you think that and gaslighting, right? Like if you were, it's your fault. And if this lauded and powerful man is abusing you, but if you were different or better or prettier or whatever he's saying to you, you wouldn't be abused because this isn't happening to other women. And that's inherently part of it. And so, you know, a piece of why this is so powerful is the fact that it's bringing these women's stories together and creating a space in which they can come out against this very powerful man.
Yeah, I think it goes back, for me, it goes back to what we talked about a little while ago, which was the fact that I guess for me, I just don't get attached to stories in general, no matter what kind of story it is. We talked about Bill Cosby last week. I mentioned R. Kelly earlier today, and you know, for the Black community, that's a lot going on, and I feel that people get disappointed because they attach themselves to these people. And I just don't attach myself to the idea of these people enough to where I can be disappointed by them. I cannot be disappointed by Eric Schneider because I'm like,
I don't give a fuck.
Well, that makes sense to me.
Right. I guess for me, I'm more disappointed that these men are allowed to hold office, and that they even referenced in the article that other people knew about this. Like, you know, people knew about this. People at the New Yorker knew about this. You know, they were friends of the victims and they knew about it. It's just, it's disappointing that it's not even about Eric Schneiderman in particular. It's about men are trash.
That is true.
And it's just, and that just keeps getting reinforced over and over and over and over at every level, everywhere. I mean, we're talking from the president of the fucking United States all the way down to, you know, some gross hotel manager who's harassing the maids who work there. I mean, every level. And this is why the Me Too movement is here now, because it's such a disappointing and gross abuse of power that it just, these stories keep coming.
Yeah, Barbara Underwood is the named acting attorney general out of New York now, so yes. She will take over all of the current cases. I believe that the New York City district attorney is doing an investigation into Eric Schneiderman.
Yeah, Cyrus Vance, who Schneiderman had opened an investigation.
At the request of Governor Cuomo.
Yes.
So that's the follow-up to what's happening right now. And of course, the legislature has to now approve, the New York legislature has to approve the new attorney general. Eric Schneiderman was on the ballot, so either they can pull... Either he's going to have to announce that he's not running for re-election, and then they'll have to put a new Democratic candidate on the ballot. Personally, I think that Preet Bharara should be running for New York Attorney General, or that should be appointed by the legislature. I think that now Democrats are in a position to have a supermajority in the New York State Senate. There's more Democrats in the New York State legislature, but they have that kind of really more conservative IDC caucus out of New York that's really been fucking shit up for Democrats and Governor Cuomo. So, but even though Governor Cuomo kind of allows it to happen, like that's a whole nother story. But we'll see who the next attorney general should be. Somebody.
Well, I don't know much about Barbara Underwood, but from what I've read, I like her.
Yeah, I think she's like, you know, nobody really knows anything about her. I think she can kind of do her job. I think once you get a high profile attorney, I mean, the New York Attorney General or the District Attorney of New York City, like those are high profile attorney generals.
Yeah, so, well, I would like to challenge the Democratic Party to find a well qualified woman to fill this high profile job.
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's definitely a lot of high profile lawyers in New York City. I mean, who knows who it's going to be? I think somebody mentioned Hillary Clinton. I don't think that Hillary Clinton should.
She's not a member of the New York Bar Association. Right. So she can't be.
I don't think
AG.
That she should go from Secretary of State to New York Attorney General either.
Yeah. I also think she should just stay home and drink Chardonnay, not because she has to, but because if I were her,
right,
I would literally buy Chardonnay by the case.
Right. Yeah. You know, but I also think that we got to get to the point where let Hillary be Hillary and do her thing. We can't just keep inserting Hillary into everything because we want her to be at the forefront.
I've talked about Framebridge before. They make it super easy and affordable to custom frame your favorite things, from art prints and posters, photos on your phone, maybe a life-size cutout of Hillary Clinton. I bet that would be expensive, but 10 out of 10 would hang in my office. So here's how it works. Just go to framebridge.com, upload your photo from your computer or directly from your Instagram feed, and they will print it. Or if you have a physical item, ticket stubs, art prints, I sent in my Women's March poster to get framed, they'll provide secure prepaid packaging so you can mail it to them for free. The expert team at Framebridge will custom frame your item in days, not weeks or months, and then deliver your finished piece directly to your door, ready to hang. And the best part is instead of the hundreds of dollars you pay at a framing store, their prices start at $39 and all shipping is free. Plus, Hellions will get 15% off their first order at Framebridge.com when they use promo code HELLBENT. Framebridge has thousands of five-star reviews and even offers a happiness guarantee. If for any reason you aren't 100% satisfied with your life-size cutout of Hillary Clinton, they will make it right. So get started framing your photos or art today. Go to Framebridge.com and use promo code HELLBENT to save an additional 15% off your first order. That's Framebridge.com, promo code HELLBENT. Framebridge.com, use promo code HELLBENT.
Speaking of the first ladies.
Yes.
So, listen. Here's what I need you to do going forward. I don't need you to be better. I need you to be best.
I need you to be best. Be best.
Be best is the new slogan.
I think it's the name of this initiative.
It is. Because behind the First Lady of the United States were two big posters or hanging things that said, be best on them.
So First Lady Melania Trump, allegedly First Lady. I still think it's Ivanka Trump. I don't want to talk about it. Anyway, First Lady Melania Trump debuted her policy initiative. So traditionally, the First Lady takes a... I was reading, and normally all the way back to Rosalynn Carter, most first ladies take on a one specific policy initiative. So, you know, Hillary Clinton took on healthcare, Michelle Obama took on children's nutrition,
fitness.
So what's interesting about Be Best, besides everything, is that it's very broad. It's kind of a scattershot initiative.
Well, the first lady did say coming out the gate that her initiative would be cyberbullying.
Right.
She said that during the right after the election.
Right. But now this she said Be Best will tackle opioid abuse, social media pressures, and mental health issues among young people.
That's because she doesn't know what she wants to do.
Right. I mean, is she also going to help the Kush bring peace to the Middle East?
Well, that's not going to happen.
I'm asking on behalf of the Kush because he doesn't know. Like, he needs help.
Well, yes. Yeah. He's got Ivanka.
So, you know, she gave this whole speech. And I'm not here to shit on Melania Trump. I think that she has her place in being complicit in helping getting Donald Trump elected. But I'm not here to shit on her. but what I will say is that there's a user on Twitter, The Rude Pundit, who tweeted, quote, fun fact, the White House trumpets talking with kids about being online, which was handed out in conjunction with the Be Best initiative, as, quote, a booklet by First Lady Melania Trump and the Federal Trade Commission. Except for an intro, it's exactly the same thing as Obama's FTC put out.
Here's somebody mentioned that to me on Facebook. They wrote something about, well, they wrote a two-parter. But they mentioned the fact that, first of all, Be Best is grammatically incorrect.
Right.
They didn't say that to me. I said that.
It is grammatically incorrect. Yes.
But I said to her, but they talked about her being an immigrant, which I think is unfair. First of all, the first lady speaks six languages and she's probably fairly intelligent. Definitely more intelligent than the president. So I don't think that we should be tying her being an immigrant to anything, to this grammatical error, because that is a staffing error to me.
Right.
That is somebody on the staff did her a disservice. To me, I think she should have named it Be Great, because
Make America Great Again.
It fits with the entire
Trump theme. Yeah.
Why wouldn't you stick with that? Why would Be Great make sense?
Be Best?
Be Best? Not so much. So I think that they're doing her a disservice. So as people continue to have those conversations out there, please don't bring up the fact that she's an immigrant and that she doesn't really...
That has nothing to do with
right.
it.
Right. It is...
This is just a bullshit policy.
Right. And it is lazy on behalf of her staff. So she probably said, I need you guys to come up with something. And they were like, you know what we're going to do? We don't get paid enough to come up with, to write our own shit.
Right.
So we're going to take some shit that we already read and we're going to put it into a policy. And it became lazy. It is laziness. That's right. What this White House is. This White House is lazy. From the East Wing to the West Wing, the entire White House is lazy.
Just lazy policy making.
Because if you really think about it, and we're going to talk about the Iran deal here in a little bit. If you really think about it, nobody's coming up with a new, like, they roll back the policies, but nobody comes up with something to replace it. And Republicans have been like that for years. They have the idea of rolling back Obamacare or repealing Obamacare, and then they don't have a replacement.
Right. Absolutely nothing. And this is also, and the timing of the rollout of this initiative says a lot. So Melania Trump said the following with a straight face, quote, children deserve every opportunity to enjoy their innocence. It's a lovely sentiment. I bet she believes that. I'm honestly not even trying to be condescending. It's a lovely sentiment. However, at the same time that this policy was being rolled out, and this might just be laziness, but I don't know. I can't tell who's playing 3D chess and who's Trump in that White House. But as this policy was being rolled out, there were two other stories that came out. The first one is that Jeff Sessions announced a new immigration policy. And this is the headline from the LA Times. Quote, children are likely to be separated from parents illegally crossing the border under new Trump administration policy. So the new policy is that if you illegally cross the border, they will take your child from your arms and separate the two of you into different detention facilities. really think about that. We're not talking about, we're not even talking about like 10-year-olds. We're talking about babies and toddlers. So for children deserve every opportunity to enjoy their innocence unless they're coming across the border.
Yeah, I think for Jeffrey Beauregard Sessions and this Trump administration, I believe that this will end up being a human rights issue and the courts will have to step in and then it just won't happen.
But even still, even if that does happen in the interim before the courts get to it, how many people is this going to affect? There's a real human cost here. And the way he said it is just so heartbreaking. He said, quote, if you are smuggling a child, then we will prosecute you and that child will be separated from you as required by law. If you don't like that, then don't smuggle children over our border. We don't want to separate families, but we don't want families to enter the border illegally. We urge them not to do so.
Yeah, and I think that's the that last sentence is very telling, though we urge them not to do so. Jeff Sessions knows that that policy won't stick. It's a scare tactic that this Trump administration has tried to use, and it kind of fits in line with their rhetoric,
right?
Because they know that if they try to do this scare tactic, that maybe it'll deter people. But in reality, they know that it's not going to stick. That's just why he says we urge them not to do so.
Right. I just think that even if one family is affected by this, that's a real human cost to this. And to do it right in conjunction with this be best bullshit, it really speaks to the white privilege and white supremacy narrative that this Trump administration is not even attempting to hide anymore. All I can say, Beauregard Sessions, the goddamn third, you're a gross human being, and that is an insult to gross human beings. Eric fucking Schneiderman thinks you're trash, so you need to look at your life and look at your choices.
Yeah, so at the same time that that was happening in the East Wing and the DOJ, I think this is an attempt to take another shot at Hillary Clinton as much as this president can. Trump is looking to cut $7 billion from the Children's Health Insurance Program.
The C in CHIP stands for children, assholes.
The proposal is a Republican effort to claim fiscal responsibility after a deficit increasing tax cut and a massive fiscal 2018 spending bill. So instead of, you know, making their friends pay a little bit more, they just want to go around cutting programs that have continued to help the people that voted for them.
Let me lay it out real fucking clear for everyone. The Republicans are paying for their tax cuts to their rich friends with CHIP money. I cannot get through this article from Bloomberg without wanting to throw something across the room. Reported in this article, quote, Senate Appropriations Chairman Richard Shelby, an Alabama Republican, said in an interview that he's open to a spending cut plan, though he hasn't seen the details. Sycophant. He said, quote, if it's frivolous stuff that we can get rid of and save taxpayer money, then we ought to do it, Shelby said. He said he doesn't favor reopening the 2018 spending bill. But you know what? I think he's going to.
I don't think that Republicans in an election year will let that happen. The idea, but Donald Trump can talk about CHIP all he wants to. Donald Trump talking about CHIP and Republicans talking about CHIP are two very different things. Republicans don't want to roll back CHIP because they know it will hurt
their re-election prospects,
which is sad that would be the reason why they don't want to roll back CHIP. But I think for Donald Trump, it is less about the fiscal responsibility than it is about taking a shot at somebody he considers an adversary.
Oh, you're saying that for him, this is about Hillary?
Correct.
Oh, because CHIP was her project. Correct. And he wants to dismantle everything that Hillary touched.
Correct.
Great.
Or Obama touched.
We'll get into that in a second.
Right.
So, okay. That makes sense.
Because it doesn't make sense. Like Richard Shelby saying, yeah, we'll take a look at it, means that they're not
that it's going right in the trash bin. Right. Okay, that's fair. But just to even imply, to even say we can get rid of some frivolous spending in the form of CHIP funding so we can fund this ridiculous fucking tax break. I wish you could see my face right now. I mean, I can't fucking handle it.
Yeah, I mean,
I try really hard not to say like all Republicans this or all Republicans that. Like, I think it is healthy and important to have at least two parties, to have dissenting opinions, to have different ideas, to have different approaches to problems. That's why things work. You're making it real hard for me, Republicans, to stay on this line.
Republicans, excuse me, are going to try to, they're going to try to balance talking about what the president's wants to do and then just not doing it so they could help them in their reelection.
Right.
But they're never, ever, 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 ever going to bring up CHIP on the campaign trail.
That's probably right.
Not a single Republican would ever bring up the fact that they agree with the president on rolling back CHIP. That's just not going to happen. That's so we'll never hear about it.
So they just are trying to appease the...
They're trying to appease the president.
The president.
They're not
as
going
the
to
the leader of the Republican
Party. I mean, Mitch McConnell... I mean, the fact that Richard Shelby said something and Mitch McConnell hasn't said something should tell you something. Mitch McConnell's like, I'm not touching that...
With the 10-foot pole.
With the 10-foot pole.
Kind of on the same vein of taking a shot at Hillary Clinton's project, let's talk about the Iran deal bullshittery that dropped 4 seconds ago.
Yeah, so the Iran deal, Trump has announced that will withdraw from the Iran nuclear deal, or the Joint Comprehensive Action Plan. He says, it's clear to me that we cannot prevent an Iranian nuclear bomb under the decaying and rotten structure of the current agreement. I'm laughing because
he said rotten.
He said, right. The Iran deal is defective at its core. If we do nothing, we know exactly what will happen. The so-called Iran deal was supposed to protect the United States and our allies from the lunacy of an Iranian nuclear bomb, a weapon that will only endanger the survival of the Iranian regime. In fact, the deal allowed Iran to continue enriching uranium over time, reach the brink of a nuclear breakout. Today, we have definitive proof that the Iranian promise was a lie. Now, first of all, that's a lie, because we know that Iran has been complying every month with the Iranian nuclear deal. What Benjamin Netanyahu tried to do last week was he did a whole statement last week, or he did a whole like PowerPoint presentation that I'm sure he put together himself, where they took old documents and intelligence and repurposed it, acted like they just found it, but it was stuff that had happened a long time ago. So for the folks that don't know, the deal ensured that Iran at the time, that had about 10,000 centrifuges, would go down to about 5,000 centrifuges. Iran would be able to continue making uranium that would not be able to produce nuclear weapons, but continue to produce nuclear power.
Right.
Which, from an environmental standpoint, you can argue whether or not that's something that that's a direction that we should be going in, is nuclear power. Donald Trump thought that part of the deal was bad. Like, why would they continue to be able to have those 5,000 centrifuges?
I genuinely think it's because he doesn't understand.
Well, he doesn't. And right. Somebody is telling him that Barack Obama made it, and that's the part of the deal that he doesn't understand, is that they can't do that.
Right.
The Iranian president came out and said that it will still negotiate staying in the nuclear deal with European countries, Russia and China, despite the U.S. withdrawal, which will continue to isolate the United States on the international stage, which is exactly what Donald Trump wants. I mean, what Vladimir Putin wants, which is also exactly what Kim Jong-un wants, because...
Yeah, we're literally playing into these dickwads' hands.
Right. Kim Jong-un said yesterday, he was like, I don't understand why the president's wading into this... North and South Korea, basically, said, I don't understand why the president's wading into this North-South Korea conversation, because they're not going... It's between us, and basically, it's between us and not the United States.
I mean, our allies begged us to stay.
Not just the allies, Republicans, obviously Democrats, generals, military, high-ranking military officers.
You know who's been, you know who's wanted to go to war with Iran since
Benjamin Netanyahu?
Well, yes. Also John Bolton.
Right. So obviously this comes at the same time that John Bolton, as national security advisor, or acting national security advisor, because he is national security, yes. It doesn't have to be confirmed, you know, has come out. But, you know, the problem with Donald Trump, and it goes back to the Hillary Clinton piece on CHIP, is that since his presidency, he's now pulled out of the Iran deal, the Paris Climate Agreement, TPP, DACA, the individual mandate in Obamacare, and the EPA standards, which...
Emission standards. Is not technically part of that like list of like right. five Obama policies dumped by Trump, but it is, I think, important. It's part of Obama's legacy.
Right. Globally, though, the
right.
Paris Climate Agreement,
right.
TPP, the Iran deal, the world is continuing without us.
Right, which is exactly... That's Russia's whole strategy, is to isolate the United States and to create a situation in which the United States is not the most powerful country in the world, is not holding these alliances together. Because what does Vladimir Putin want? Dissolution of NAFTA. When does he want it? Right fucking now.
Right, which is, again, a situation where that Democrats can campaign on and should be out there saying, especially the ones that sit on armed services and intelligence, mm-hmm. should be out there saying, this is exactly what they want. And I'm sure they are. You know, Tim Kaine and Adam Schiff and Ted Lieu and a lot of these congressmen, Kamala Harris, and a lot of all the California Democrats.
I was going to say.
All the California Democrats sit on intelligence.
Well, this is another case of very complex messages needing very precise messaging. And threading that needle has proved very difficult for the Democrats.
Right. And you know, especially with TPP, nobody, you know, the president did say that he wants to try to get back into TPP recently, which is very funny.
I know he did. And I just did. Like,
you're like, dude, you should have never got out in the
just
first place.
Fuck on it. Go fuck yourself.
So it is going to be very interesting to see what happens over the next few months. Technically, the White House has 180 days to impose sanctions between now and any renegotiation. But who would want to renegotiate with the United States? Actually, who would want to negotiate with the United States?
Wouldn't.
At least this administration. I think going forward.
I love that you believe in the strength of our institutions. Because I'm losing faith.
I don't believe that one man can take down the United States. I mean, it might take it down temporarily, which is what's happening. But there is a reason why our country doesn't operate like Russia, where there are term limits, like where the Congress isn't going to get rid of term limits.
Right.
You know, so that's something that we can kind of look forward to.
And that was the only thing that Trump campaigned on that I actually agreed with.
Was term limits?
Yeah. was limiting the number of terms a person can serve.
I think that, well, in Congress too, I think that there is something to be said for limiting or creating term limits for representatives as well. But at the same time, we're in the position, Connecticut became the 11th state, I believe, this
right.
weekend. To the Connecticut governor signed a bill that would make the popular vote the way that you get their electoral votes.
Right.
And that's a huge chunk. So 11 states, that's a huge chunk. California is included in that.
Right. We don't split our...
Right. So if you win the popular vote nationally,
right.
not just in the state, then you get those electoral votes.
Right.
And that's a big loss for Republicans.
I was going to say, that's going to change the way people campaign in California, because 55 electoral votes is not nothing.
Right. And as we've seen, Republicans have not won the popular vote in the last two decades.
Yep.
Not just as a on the presidential level, but on the congressional level as well. Not that electoral votes matter on the congressional level, but still, they have not won the popular vote, and they will not win the popular vote anymore. And that's going to be that's going to smell trouble for them going forward. So 2020. You know, if more Democratic states sign on to this, that's a huge chunk.
It's a huge chunk
of the electoral votes.
I I talk about Sunbasket all the time. It is still one of my favorite things to talk about in these ads. Sunbasket makes it so easy and convenient to cook healthy, delicious meals at home that even I can do it. I made myself braised chicken with roasted artichokes, and I was really proud of myself. Now you get more options than ever. Just go to the Sunbasket app or website and pick from 18 weekly recipes. There are paleo, gluten-free, lean and clean, vegan, Mediterranean, family options, and more. Sunbasket works with the best farms and suppliers to bring you fresh, organic produce and responsibly raised meats and seafood. Everything they offer is super delicious. And it only takes 30 minutes to get on the table, which is less time than it takes Rudy Giuliani to tank Trump's legal case. So go to sunbasket.com/hellbent to learn more and get $35 off your first order. That's sunbasket.com/hellbent. sunbasket.com/hellbent.
All right, Devin, let's get into some gratitude check.
Yes. So I am grateful this week for South Carolina Democrats in the state legislature. They blocked a very restrictive abortion bill with a days-long filibuster. So this bill was proposed, and I believe this is the fourth time it's come up for debate. Republicans keep fucking trying. But it would have outlawed 97% of the roughly 5,700 abortions performed each year in South Carolina, which is a lot of fucking abortions. So it was so restrictive that the bill only made exceptions for race, for rape, incest, or serious medical emergencies, which I hate the serious medical emergencies thing because who decides what's a serious medical emergency? Just as an aside. So Republicans in the state legislature tried to force this bill through by setting the debate for Thursday, which is the last day that the legislature works. And they didn't think that people would want to stay into the weekend to fight it. And Democrats were having absolutely fucking nothing with that. The Democrats lined up one senator after another and filibustered the shit. It was a 2-day filibuster. Some senators changed travel plans to stay. I know what they talked about, one who was supposed to go to the Kentucky Derby, who was like, this is more
important.
Better
watch it on TV, man.
Yeah, right. And so they didn't leave for two straight days, and they won. Two Republican members of the legislature flipped votes to end the debate with Democrats. So it's killed.
Which is great. Won't come back for another year.
Exactly. So maybe we have this fight again. Maybe they're like, okay, fifth time is not the fucking charm.
Not the charm.
Let's just put it down. So I thought that was a really great story. I love the work being done, you know, on a state level. And, you know, there are so many positions at state and local levels that deal directly with these things that affect constituents directly. So if you don't want restrictive abortion laws in your state, get some fucking Democrats in the state legislature. So very good thing to be grateful for. Drexel, what are you grateful for today?
I was thinking about this as you were talking. They are not mutually exclusive, though. I was just thinking about it as you were talking. Mother's Day is coming up on Sunday, so definitely want to shout out to all of the mothers out there, especially those that are listening, and you, and so happy Mother's Day to everybody, because as we've seen, women clearly are the ones who are doing it. And hopefully continuing to raise, at this point in our generation, raising men to be better. I'm sorry, be best. And so, you know, I think, you know, I'm grateful for the way that my mom raised me and my brothers, and continuing to see that throughout some of the new moms. I met some new moms this weekend. We had a Mother's Day event at Macy's this weekend. So actually I had a mom come up to me. She was like, it was my first Mother's Day, because she just had a newborn. So that was really great to see and have those conversations. And at Disneyland, I saw a lot of new moms yesterday as well. So so happy Mother's Day to everybody that's a mom and listening.
Yeah. Oh, that's fantastic. I mean, but it is kind of related, because like, you get to choose when to be a mom.
Exactly. It is.
It is
I
related.
Just didn't want to be like abortion and Mother's Day.
No, no. No, but I mean, it's definitely related.
All right, Devin, let's get into block five, which basically we've been doing this entire episode. Our favorite block, our dickwad of the week.
Week. Yeah, I said on the outline that it's all fucking men, and then I said, sorry, Drexel. But in particular, we have been talking about a lot of dickwads today. But one really stood out this week, Drexel.
Like, who?
Ross Douthat.
Well, his name alone already.
Honestly, like, it's kind of a cell phone. I know you don't pick your own name, but, like, if there was ever a dickwad name,
that would be it.
That would be it.
Who is Ross?
So he is an op-ed writer, and he wrote an op-ed for where else? The New York Times, in response to the incel community, which is involuntary celibate, which is a whole layer of shit that we haven't even gotten into in this show yet. I have a whole episode planned for it, so buckle up. But the incel, involuntary celibate community, is a community of men who cry male tears because they can't, they believe that women are denying them access to sex. And then the violence
I saw that in the dickwad.
Yeah. And then the violence that stems from the literal personification of male tears. So the guy who ran his van into the crowd in Toronto just recently claimed to be part of this incel movement. The shooting in Isla Vista, which was 5 or 6 years ago now, he was a self-proclaimed incel community member. And so Ross Douthat wrote a piece called The Redistribution of Sex, in which he argued that women are objects that should be made available for men's use in order to prevent acts of violence. So not only does this put the onus of male violence squarely on women, but it is really, that's the underlying rhetoric that gives us men like Eric Schneiderman. There was another piece in Splinter by Lux Alptrom, and she entitled it Unfuckable Women Don't Go on Killing Sprees. And it was talking about how women are also, you know, are also denied access to sex and romance, and non-binary people and queer people and LGBT community. Everyone has experienced, you know, a lack of the sexual or romantic contact that they want. But it's these men that go off on violence sprees. And so Douthat is arguing that in order to combat the male violence that stems from this really universal issue, you can apply economic theory to it. You know, just like you could apply economic theory to the wage inequality, right? Like a communist or a socialist society that redistributes wealth. So redistribute the sex, which I don't know exactly what that means. Would that be like paying sex workers? Would that be forcing women Handmaid's Tale style? Would that be sex robots? Not clear. But the only way that you can think that sex can be manipulated by economic theory is to believe that sex is currency. And for sex to be currency, one side of the equation has to be an object to be bartered. And so in this tortured analogy, that would be the women in the story. So he's basically arguing that women are sexual objects with no agency whose only role is to give sex to violent men so they do not commit acts of violence. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is rape culture.
Yeah, I'm actually taking a look at this Ross Douthat right now.
Yeah.
He looks like he believes that.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean,
he honestly, usually rape culture and objectification, and objectification is kind of a lean term for what we're talking about here, but objectification of women is not so blatant. Like, it takes something to just put it out there as like, nope, I believe women are objects and they're only there to have sex with violent men. That's what he's saying.
We're going to have to get him a violent robot. He's married, though.
Oh, God. Blink yeah. twice if you're...
yeah.
If you need help. All All right, Hellions, last but not least, let's get into some action items. So something you can do after the show. The first one on my list, subscribe to The New Yorker. As we mentioned at the top of the show, they broke both the Weinstein and Schneiderman stories. Free press is one of our last remaining bastions, and it is important and imperative, really, that we fund them. So vote with your dollar. Give your money to these publications that are doing this journalistic work. Let's also get some fucking women elected. What do you think? Drexel, I believe there are some primaries today.
There are some primaries, some statewide primaries, some ballot measures, some judicial nominees, some municipal candidates, and some recalls today in Indiana, North Carolina, Ohio, West Virginia, which is a huge one because Don Blankenship is running, and Don Blankenship is a nut job, where the president had to come out. He's basically the Roy Moore of West Virginia.
Great.
To the fact that Donald Trump had to come out and say Don Blankenship will lose if he is the Republican candidate. Now, Don Blankenship and the Republicans are running against Joe Manchin. So this is definitely a race that we have to win.
Right.
Regardless of how you feel about Joe Manchin, Don Blankenship is going out there today and saying that he is going to be the nominee, regardless of if the president came out and the race has tightened a little bit. So
if the president thinks you're trash, you're trash.
You're probably pretty terrible. But Donald Trump, again, does not want to be put in the position of Roy Moore. New Jersey has some municipal stuff, Michigan and Maine. So if you're any of those states, by the time that, and you have not voted by the time that this podcast comes out, definitely get out there and do that. If you're here in California, make sure that you go out and vote on June 5th. That is coming up. So take a look at those ballot measures as well. I mean, and those candidates, because there's a lot coming up. I watched a really good Vice News show last night with Katie Hill in the 25th, because you were at Jess Phoenix's campaign event a few weeks ago. And of course, my friend Brian Caforio, who's also in the 25th, who's also running. So that's going to be a very interesting race to watch. And so we'll see what happens. But yeah, definitely take a look at those candidates. I don't know what's going to happen in my, as we continue to talk about these guys like Eric Schneiderman and Donald Trump and Harvey Weinstein, in my own district, Tony Cardenas, who is the congressman out of the 29th district, has been accused of, he kind of outed himself basically because there was a lawsuit against him. But he is also up for re-election this year. So yeah, we are going to see what happens. And so it's a shitty situation. But
yeah, one of our listeners actually tipped us off to Gil Cisneros, who's running for Congress in California, has a credible allegation of sexual assault. So these are serious dickwads that need to be voted out of office. So
yeah, Gil's running against Ed Royce in the 39th congressional district. So again, a situation where we want to make sure we're putting great Democrats in that don't have a problem.
Right.
That's not the situation that we want to put ourselves in. And
right.
I think for Tony and Jill, you know, either they step out and keep on moving.
Exactly. So get involved, get in your communities. Drexel, that is it for us today.
That is all. What a great episode.
It was a great
episode. By the way, I don't want a lot of hate mail about the first topic of the Eric Schneiderman piece. So hold your fire. You know, it would not be a good show if we did not disagree often. So
I am also sure that we will get some great feedback and we will have a lively discussion next week.
Yes.
I will be back here on Thursday with a very special guest. Until then, raise some hell and remember to be kind.